Welcome to Expanding Your Faith, a podcast hosted by Bishop Greer Godsey of the Old Catholic Churches International. Expanding Your Faith brings together a panel of well-educated clergy and laity to discuss modern events with a biblical perspective. Our podcast is about to start. Please stay tuned. Expanding Your Faith. I'm Bishop Greer, and joining me tonight is Reverend Mark.
Greetings, everyone.
And Bishop Ben.
Greetings to all.
So tonight we thought we would discuss a rather lighthearted topic of mental health and when to say goodbye, when to set boundaries, when to say enough is enough. You know, we've had a lot of discussions about the various mental health crises that exist in the United States and abroad. And so, you know, sometimes you'll come across somebody who is just quite happy and content to be unhappy, to be upset, to not be their best selves. And so, what do you do in those situations? How far do you let it go before you begin establishing boundaries and before you begin saying enough is enough?
It always fascinates me that there are people that are, I wouldn't say happy, but are content to stay in the state that they're in. Now, you know, we kind of discussed when I thought about this idea, pitched it to Bishop. We kind of discussed, we're not talking about people that they can't really identify what's going on with them. They just know there's issues, or people that are just now stepping in to get professional help. People that are struggling to get a handle on things, but they're actively working towards betterment. But our premise was kind of like, what do you do with those individuals that, you know, identify what the problem is? They've accepted what the challenges are. They've been to professionals, they've been to different people,
right?
But they've decided to not actually work on it, instead of falling back and just saying, well, I suffer from, and you fill in the blank. And what do we do with in those situations where, you know, sometimes people can't control certain things that are going on in their, can't help it, but they don't, the things that are going on internally and in their minds and their hearts, but at the same time, they don't do anything to move towards a normal for them,
right,
a coping, or how to move forward. They just keep falling back on it. You know, what do we do in those situations? And I think it's an interesting topic, because at some point you do have to say, okay, yes, I understand the challenges that are going on in life. Yes, there's a diagnosed issue. What are you doing?
Right.
And is that a fair question?
I think it is. I think that is a fair question. You know, there comes a point where, you know, you have to be willing to confront that person and be willing to hold them accountable for their own actions and reactions and processes they're going through. And I think that it's important that, you know, we also hold them accountable for the fact that, you know, they've been given the tools that they need to deal with this by professionals, and whether or not they're using them or not, you know, in those cases. Or they simply haven't bothered to set aside time to go and see a professional to, you know, do what needs to be done to better themselves, you know, and so they need to be held accountable for that too.
Absolutely.
You know? And so I think that in my case in particular, my mother, for example, the boundary I set for her was, if you get mental health help, you can be a part of our lives. If not, then you can't. And so I left it then in her ballpark, and we're over 23 years now.
Yeah.
And it will be 23 years. No, 2 years this February since we last talked. So, you know, she's made that choice not to get the help that she needs. And so the impetus then falls on her.
Yeah.
Just like it falls on anybody in your life that you set a boundary for and they choose to just ignore it.
Yeah. And, you know, even scripture tells us that there's wisdom in a multitude of counsel, that we don't know everything, that we have some help here. And she just hit a bunch of buttons, the kitty cat. So hopefully, maybe there was an echo, a little added addition there. You know, to be perfectly clear, Psalms 34 says that that the Lord is near the brokenhearted,
right,
and the crushed spirit. So God is not alienating us when we are going through those challenges in our life, particularly those challenges that are between our two ears,
right,
and those things that, you know, we have no control over, like chemical issues in the body and that affect us. So God is definitely there. And there are things that happen in life that we go through, situations that break our hearts and our spirits. God is there. But I think where some of our theology throws us is the fact that we back up and we embrace the theology, well, God's in control and God will handle this. And, you know, that puts everything over on God. And we're just kind of like, okay, you know, is anything going to happen? But there's plenty of verses and there's plenty of passages of scripture that are instructive for us to do things.
Right.
There are things that we are to do.
Right.
And, you know, God's not up there just pulling all the strings in my life. You know, I have choices and I have decisions I have to make. And one of those decisions and choices is I want to have my heart and my spirit and my mind renewed and stayed on things that lead me to life and to goodness.
Right.
And by doing that, there's certain things that I have to embrace. And, you know, modern medicine has given us such a better understanding of how the mind works and how, you know, things inside our bodies work when they're not functioning correctly.
Right.
And that affects our mental health.
Right.
And so it's important for us to go to those individuals that can say, okay, you know, it could be a simple solution. It could be a simple fix. It could be you need more of this, less of that. Or
right,
here's some steps that'll help you. Let's walk them together. And all those things. But you don't know, you know, until you venture out there to embrace them.
Right. Well, and therein lies the issue is you have to be willing to make a first step, you know. And a lot of that requires you to take ownership of those things in your life that are not the best in the world.
Uh-oh.
And we don't want to do that. We don't want to take ownership of those things because those are the dark and ugly and bad parts of us. But the reality is, it's what makes us who we are. And so in taking ownership, we take ownership of the fact that we are who we are, but we also are in control of who we are and our destiny. You know, we have control, but it requires us to take ownership in order to have that kind of control.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was telling somebody today, you know, it's important for us to accurately see where we are in life, as opposed to living in a fantasy or living in certain situations where we're not seeing accurately ourselves or our situations. Right. And therefore, when we're not seeing accurately, we're making decisions based on the wrong, you know, assumption of who we are, where we are, what we're going through. And,
or from a place of a lack of good data, too.
Yes.
Wholesome data.
Yeah. Correct. An understanding of, you know, why am I feeling the way I'm feeling? Right. You know, I often go to individuals, and whether it be a therapist or close friends, and say, this is what I'm thinking.
Right.
You know, this is, you know, based on these things, this is what I'm thinking. This is how I'm processing. Am I missing it? Am I off? Because, you know, we're close to situations. We don't necessarily see the big picture. You're talking about taking ownership of where we are. Sometimes we have to take ownership of things that are not of our own making. You know, their thing, whether it be our, you know, our bodies are wired just a little bit different and they're responding not quite right. Whether we are in situations where we were abused or we're in situations where we didn't ask for the things that happened to us, and yet they did. And so we still have to take ownership, not of, you know, I'm owning the fact that that happened to me from the standpoint of I wanted it to happen, but owning the fact that this is the condition that I'm in. This is where I'm at. I didn't choose to, but I've got to work with what I've got.
Right.
And because there's plenty of things that we don't have control over that happen to us.
Yes.
But at the same time, and that's, you know, it's life. We have to step up and say, okay, now I've got to handle this. One of the best examples that I know to give is the understanding that as a pastor, sometimes I have to pay when people come and they're a part of my church and they're in my church and now I'm responsible as the shepherd. Sometimes I have to pay for the mistakes that other people did.
Yes, indeed.
Upon them, the traumas, not treating them justly and honorably and loving. And so in order for me to shepherd, sometimes I get that backlash or I get the responses that I'm like, well, wait a minute. Whoa, whoa, whoa. I didn't do that. And I have to be willing to accept that and to embrace it and take ownership of, yeah, I didn't do that to them, but I want to see them in a place of wholeness. So I'm going to play my part, love them, be patient, be kind, everything I can. So, yeah.
Right. And it's true that... sorry, there was a conversation occurring in the chat about one of our friends is running a fever. And so they were asking for advice. So, this is very true, though, that, you know, we do face people who struggle identifying what their issues are. They struggle putting into practice the tools they're given, the help that they're given, or they have trouble accepting the support and love and care that people around them give. And it's I know it's difficult for some of them because, you know, they have been so badly hurt in the past.
Right.
And of course, it's not on us to force them to take that, you know, love and care and concern, but rather just to be there for them as they need it. But that also requires us to have a certain amount of patience with them too. And so I think that shows the difference between those people who are willing to try to make a change and those who aren't. And, you know, so I am always willing to extend my hand and help somebody who is looking to better themselves. But I also am cognizant of the fact there has to be boundaries for those that aren't willing to better themselves.
I used to know this individual. I know this person that was, and forgive me, I never can remember which one's which, but the but he had uncontrollable diabetes, and was very well educated about it. Very well, he could tell you all about being diabetic. And so on and so forth. He had, you know, the tools that he needed. He had the, you know, the kit to make sure, you know, this is the days before pumps and, you know, stuff. So he had to handle everything. And, but he wouldn't eat right.
Right.
Sometimes he wouldn't eat but once a day, if that. Mm-hmm. Or if he did eat, he would, you know, or if he did do something, he'd drink a, you know, a Dunkin' Donuts coffee filled with sugar.
Why is he talking about me?
But what he would do, what would happen a lot of times is he would get into either he would get to the place of, you know, just passing out, or he would get in a situation where he would start acting out and blaming it on his diabetes, you know, becoming angry, aggressive, and all this other stuff. And here's a person that knows his situation, knows how his body's reacting, knows how to treat and what he's supposed to do, but completely ignores it all. And then when he falls into a situation where he's passing out or, you know, raging and blaming, and then saying, oh, well, it's because I'm this, I'm because I'm that, we're supposed to give you a hard pass. I mean, like, well, you're not taking care of yourself and you're not embracing the tools and the knowledge that you know and you can quote to everybody and say, but yet I'm supposed to endure the abuse or I'm supposed to endure the hardship because you choose not to operate in wisdom and in knowledge.
Right.
So it's kind of those situations and those type of individuals that it's like, okay, how far, yes, they have a challenge ahead of them, but they also have, they've also embraced the knowledge of how to either solve the problem, minimize the impact. How far do we go with those individuals? Right. Yes, we have patience, we have love, we have compassion and empathy, but how... When do we start setting up boundaries to where they're not abusing in our direction?
Right. That's a good question. And I think that I would use any model for healthcare, I think, as a guide for that. You know, an example, you have a friend who has cut themselves in the kitchen while they were hacking up a ham or something, and they've nearly cut off their, you know, two or three fingers, and they're bleeding everywhere, and they were to say to you, oh, I'll be fine, it's no big deal, I'll just, you know, put a Band-Aid on it, it'll be okay. you wouldn't sit there and go, oh, that's fine, you know, no big deal. No, you would expect them to get up and go to the ER, get their fingers reattached, or, you know, at least get the bleeding stopped, you know. I think the same is true of mental health, you know. When it comes to a point to where they are doing damage to themselves or others, or it looks as though they're going to do damage to themselves or others, that's when boundaries begin to have to come into play. And for those of us like myself and Reverend Mark, we're mandatory reporters. So if somebody comes to us in a crisis where there is a potential for a loss of life, either themselves or someone close to them, we have to report that.
Yes.
And so, and that also tends to frustrate and upset people because that's a hard boundary.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not going to jail because you were having a bad day and said something and I didn't take it seriously and you ended up doing something. And I'm not going to jail for you.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, maybe this would be a moment of wake up where, you know, they got to that reaching out phase and, you know, you were, you know, I know you have and I have had to call for wellness checks on individuals. And hopefully it'll bring some wake up calls to their lives. But at the same time, we step back and we do everything we can. And all that we know to do. And I think there has to be the alertness that, and I'm not talking about setting up a situation to where, you know, the person does finally decide that they're going to get help. And then you're like, no, we've done burned that bridge. I blew it up and we're never crossing it again.
Right.
But, you know, is there a place at which we see people that just keep going over the same stuff over and over and over again? They may be in therapy or they may have done lengthy amount of therapy, but just quit. And they can tell you what their issues are. And they can tell you what their challenges are. But yet they keep falling back using the reasoning of why they keep treating you the way they are and other people the way they are is because, well, I've been through this and I've done, well, you've identified what you've got to work on.
Right.
You've identified. And yes, those things stay with you. For most people, they stay with you the rest of your life. And let me extend a hand to move forward. Let other people extend a hand to move forward. But when those hands keep getting slapped, you know, do we feel guilty because we don't keep extending the hand and it keeps getting slapped? What do we do?
Well, and I think that you're right on that aspect. I don't think that if somebody keeps slapping your hand away, I don't think you necessarily keep trying indefinitely. I think that, you know, you try probably less often to the point to where if they just completely continue to slap your hand away, you just stop offering. You know, that's just human nature. Nate asked, how would boundaries work if the person had a personality disorder like BPD, for example? BPD is borderline personality disorder. It's a subclassification of bipolar disorder. Personality disorders tend to be a little bit different in the fact that you really have to use a cognitive behavioral approach to people with BPD or bipolar. Especially in manic phases, you have to turn that manic energy towards something productive. You know, also for those that suffer from borderline or bipolar depression cycles, It's also required to challenge the negative cognitions, negative thought processes that fuel that depression. So several different types of boundaries come into play in those situations. Now, as long as it's not somebody with borderline personality disorder, narcissism, because if that's the case, well, you're screwed. if it's just borderline personality disorder, then typically, the boundaries are twofold. One, boundaries that help redirect the manic energy, and two, boundaries that basically say, I'm not going to deal in negatives. So we're not going to talk negatively. We're not going to talk nihilistically. We're going to focus on how do we solve problems? How do we look at the bright side of things? So it requires a twofold boundary for people with borderline personality disorder. Anybody with personality disorders, it's going to require multiple avenues of approach to get them help, because to varying degrees, personality disorders lend themselves to not being able to accept what's actually going on as their own stuff, and so that makes it a little more difficult sometimes.
Yeah, it can be very draining, because I've lived with individuals that have those challenges, and the manic phases sometimes are encouraging, because they can enter into that manic phase of wanting to do better, and you're all encouraged, and then it turns on a dime. And sometimes it turns on a dime and it ends relationships, or it ends friendships, or and those are hard. And it's hard to say, okay, what do we do now? And having been in those situations where you reach out, you try to mend the fence, or you try to make things work. And to me, you go as far as you are able to go. Especially if you don't see changes, if you don't see, them reaching out to their therapist or their doctors for adjustment and medications, learning different things to help them when they come to those phases, And I've been around people that will tell me, I'm going through a manic phase and I'm trying to work on the steps that help me stay as balanced as I can.
Right.
They know the techniques they need to use to help pull them out of it. And sometimes it just overwhelms them, and you have sympathy or empathy, for them. But at the same time, you have to find out where you're, once I get to this level of expended energy, this is where I have to start protecting myself. I have to start embracing a boundary, lending them energy when you can, but it's definitely a challenge. I'm not an expert on dealing with those situations, but I have had experience, and it's hard when it's, especially when you deeply care about those individuals. They're part of your family, good friends, and it's hard to live through that with them. If you love them, you do. It makes it easier when you see them reaching to succeed in overcoming it, or to succeed to minimize those phases. It makes it hard when they just are throwing their hands up in the air and blaming it on the phase that they're in.
Right. Well, it's easy to be that, to have that crutch, And I hate to say it that way, because I know it's going to upset some people.
Yeah.
who have mental health issues, but it is true. It becomes a crutch if we're not careful.
Yes.
You know, I don't have to change because this is who I am. No, you're not your mental illness. You are a human being. Yes. Who has a mental illness.
Yes.
There's a big difference. And some people internalize so much to the point that that's what they do. It gives them license. They feel it gives them license to act out.
Right.
And so, but that's just not the case, you know. We all have a responsibility no matter what our illnesses are, whether physical, mental, emotional, doesn't matter. To do the best we can to treat each other with love and kindness and support. But by the same token, there are appropriate times to cut people off. And when that person has become toxic and abusive, you don't really have a choice but to say, you know what? You're on your own.
Yeah.
And I've had to cut off many people over the years because they just did not want to get help. And as someone once told me years ago, you cannot want to help them more than they want help.
That's right.
And so to a certain degree, we have to, you know, step back and just let it be.
Well, we want to be healthy support, a healthy support system.
Right.
We want to be something that is contributing to success, contributing to healing. And, you know, sometimes you have people that are embracing behaviors that are sustaining those behaviors that are challenging. And, you know, again, we're not sitting here making light of anybody's struggles, mental illnesses, challenges, or so forth. We're saying we want to be positioned to where we are a positive force, reaching in and helping where it is possible. But let's face it, there are some people that make it impossible by their rejection of knowledge and wisdom and assistance that's professional.
I think it's also important for us to, especially as clergy, is to talk more openly about the fact that we do struggle ourselves with mental health issues.
Well, I'm perfect, but
well,
there's others. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. And there's so many people that think that they're alone. You know, that nobody is going through what they go through.
Right.
Well, I can tell you, as early as 2015, Pew Research Center asked clergy about their mental health. 75% reported having some sort of mental health concern. That was depression or anxiety or...
75%
of clergy report having some sort of mental health issue. Majority of those actually are depression, which is not surprising.
Yeah.
But there are personality disorders, and there were, you know, people with anxiety disorders and things as well. So, I mean, and for there to be so many, we don't hardly talk about it. You know?
Well, it's a catch-22 with pastors, you know. You have to embrace that you are in a leadership position. You have to embrace that you're trying to lead your flock. And you have to find that balancing act of being real in the pulpit, because I think there's a lot of times people hold clergy on unwarranted pedestals, but you have to have respect for the person that is leading, but you also have to remember that we are still in a human shell, and we're susceptible to our emotions and the factors and the forces that are going on around us.
You mean we're not practically perfect at all times?
You know, I'm close to that Mary Poppins, practically perfect in every way, but there's the word practically.
Right.
Actually, it's maybe, and then you start realizing, no, not at all.
Right.
Not at all perfect.
Well, and I understand that, you know, it's difficult to discuss it because it makes us vulnerable.
Yes.
And in some regards, a lot of pastors don't want to be that vulnerable with their people.
Right.
And, but unfortunately, that lack of vulnerability is what creates the pedestal situation.
Yeah.
Because we don't talk about what's really going on in our lives. We don't talk about our struggles and whatnot. And so they just think that we live practically trouble-free lives. You know, nothing ever goes wrong in a pastor's life.
Nothing.
Nothing ever. Except for the millions of things that do go wrong on a daily basis.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, we have to, you know, when we come home, we have to tend to our issues and our things and pay our bills, and you know, we're concerned about those that are going through health crisis and struggles, and you know, I'm sure Bishop does the same thing that I do, that you know, you get that text or something, please pray for me, and you become worried, and God, is there anything that I can be done, anything can happen? And you know, I lay in bed awake at night trying to figure out how to serve better or how to help a particular individual, how, you know, what's the best way that I can be light and life to someone that's going through XYZ issues. And it can become exhausting. It's a good exhausting because you're fulfilling your calling.
Right.
But at the same time, it can be very taxing because, again, we're in mortal shell.
Yeah, we are definitely not the Energizer Bunny. Mm-mm. That's for sure.
But what would you say would be some good boundaries to set with people that are coming to the place going, I don't know what else to do with my friend, my partner, my family member? They have the tools, but they keep backtracking or just not even picking them up.
I think the first step is always, how can we be part of the solution? And sometimes it's something as simple as just saying to the person, hey, remember these steps. Remember this grounding exercise. Remember this centering practice, you know, kind of giving them a hint that and so I think that it's I think it's important that we do that process, that we set those boundaries with people. I'm sorry, my train of thought just lost the station there because the cat decided to
jump up on the desk.
Somersault across the desk. She's driving me nuts tonight.
She wants to give her opinion.
And I think it's important, too, that even with spouses and things, that, you know, we do have certain boundaries even with them. You know, okay, if you're not going to go see the doctor, then, you know, XYZ will happen. Or if you're not going to take your medicines right, then, you know, XYZ will happen. You know, sometimes we have to put that accountability in place to protect ourselves and our family.
Yeah, and it's so vital to recognize that that's okay to do. It's all right to step back and to, you know, to hold yourself accountable too, that you're not going to be pulled into a place of being worn out, because then you know you're no benefit to either person, right, yourself or them.
Right. And I see that so often too, especially people who have family in hospital and in mental health facilities. They just run themselves ragged.
Yep.
You know, and before you know it, they end up in the hospital and they're doing nobody any good. And now they're being a drain on resources themselves because they allowed their, you know, battery to run low.
Right.
So, you know, sometimes, and this is something that, you know, my wife and I took care of her mother who had schizoaffective disorder for years. And my wife had this, I mean, it's part of being a daughter, you know, it's a child, it, you know, it is done, she would send her mama up there to the hospital for care, but then she'd spend time up there with her every day, you know, going to see her, spending all of her lunch break with her and stuff like that. I'm going, you know, she's in a safe place getting treatment. You can take a step back and spend time on yourself for a little bit. Mm-hmm. Just let her be up there. It'll be okay. You know. And, of course, most of the time that ended up being true. You know, she was fine. And they get straightened out and come home. So I think it's important, too, that we keep in mind our own self-care in these processes. And so it's okay to say to someone, no, I'm sorry, I can't engage with you in this stuff that you're dealing with right now because I'm dealing with my own stuff. You know, it's okay to say you need to seek more professional help than I can give you. You know?
Right.
It's all right to do that.
Yeah. And yeah, because there's, it's okay for us to, even in these situations, as in different parts of life, when we don't know something, it's okay to step back and say, I don't know. I don't know how to help you, or I don't know how to be a benefit. And, you know, we as people that are not struggling, as our friend or partner or family member is, it's okay for us to step back and say, okay, how do I learn to be a positive? How can I be a benefit in this situation? But at the end of the day, it is okay to step back and say, I can't be your solution because I'm too close. Let's either together go and see how we can tackle this together. You know, I'll drive you, I'll help you. Maybe, you know, if you're in the position to pay for the session with the doctor, if that's needed.
Right.
Whatever it is, I mean, what can we do? Sometimes being the cheerleader on the side is all we can do.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes, like you said, the best thing to do is, can I give you a ride? You know, can I sit in the waiting room with you? You know, that kind of thing. Maybe all they need to get up and go to the doctor, you know. Maybe that's what's holding them back is that feeling of self-consciousness, being there alone in the doctor's office.
Yeah.
Maybe you being there is the impetus they need to get the help they need.
Yeah. Yeah, some people do, especially early on, they need that extra support. Mm-hmm. There's people in my life I know that they do better when there's a friend they know they can support and that is just there. Present. We're not trying to solve the problem. We're just there going, hey, we'll hold your hand through this, or we'll be present, you know, tell you jokes, whatever it is. We'll be there. And sometimes just knowing that somebody's there lends to the healing.
So I know Bishop Ben has all the answers to this topic.
Yes.
Because he's been over there being very quiet.
Extremely quiet.
I'm sorry. I'm not an expert on that topic.
That's okay. And now it's time for final thoughts. So I'm going to let Bishop Ben go first.
Thank you for throwing me into the fire, but that's okay. I agree with what you all were saying a lot about what you all were saying about boundaries. I guess the key takeaway for everybody, including me, is knowing how to recognize how to help people when they have a mental illness, and also how to set those healthy boundaries with them. But the key factor is recognizing that they need the help, and also the clergy, like me with Uvalde, you know, you need that extra help. Sometimes you have to remember you need to be, as a clergy, we need help too. We're not perfect. Well, I know I'm not. So, anyways, the key thing is, you know, get some help, set healthy boundaries, and respect the people's boundaries for that.
I agree. Reverend Mark, your thoughts?
I think keeping in, if there's a thought that you can keep in mind is what Bishop said earlier, how can I be a part of the solution? And that'll look different for so many different people in so many different situations. You know, there's a lot of people that have the same type of a scenario or similar type of situations, but they're never exact.
Right.
And how people respond is different, and how people embrace what they need to is different. And I mean, it's a case by case basis, but if we can keep, how can I be a part of the solution? Sometimes removing ourselves entirely from it is the part of the solution. Sometimes just being that cheerleader on the side. Sometimes it's educating ourselves how to be a support based on their particular needs, their particular challenges, the other person. Sometimes we have to realize if we're an enabler, that we have to step back from that. How can I be a part of the solution? That may not be an overnight process. You may have to go get some professional help to get there as well, particularly if you are a family member or a relative or, you know, a spouse. But if you ask yourself that question, I'm a big fan of asking questions, how can I be a part of the solution? And then see how that evolves.
Excellent. And my final thought is this. Don't ever be afraid to reach out for help. There are plenty of us who experience this on a day-to-day basis. We've lived it the majority of our lives, and we're here to help you find the path forward, to find the help that you need, if you're willing to put the effort into it. If you're willing to put one foot in front of the other, we're willing to walk the road with you.
That's right.
So don't be afraid to reach out for help, my friends.
Yes.
As always, you can dial 988 in the United States for mental health care. Trevor Project also provides mental health care for teens and LGBTQIA young adults who need it. There's also a trans hotline for those who need it as well. So you can check those out. We'll have information in the comment about it as well. Until next week, which I don't know what we're going to do next week, I'm going to try to plan for the last podcast of January, which will probably be February 1st, I'm going to try to see if we can get Dr. Bird and Dr. Trim together long enough to do Spirituality of Star Trek.
So, oh!
Yay!
If we can get them together, that'll be great. So we'll see what happens. But until then, until next week, when we once again attempt to expand your faith, keep shining bright, my friends.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of Expanding Your Faith. For more information on expanding your faith, check us out on facebook.com/expandingyourfaith. We are available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, and wherever you find your podcasts. Until next week, when we once again attempt to expand your faith, keep shining bright.